Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and DebEvansConsulting.com.
Wow, this is Deb Evans coming to you live from Texas. Hey, AK, did he have a little hiccup there in his announcing?
Yeah,
or was
I don't
it just
know.
Me? I thought it's like, whoa. Oh, anyway, so how are you, AK?
I'm doing very well, and you, Ms. Deb?
Just fine and dandy. Now, did I see that there's tropical storms on the East Coast again? What is it with you guys and your weather?
I don't know. I didn't even know it was raining, and I went to take the dog out before the show, and it's pouring, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you've got a big tropical storm coming through and flooding warnings. Yeah, I should watch. I should, you know, let you know what's happening in the Baltimore-Washington, D.C. corridor. Yes.
Could you keep me abreast of the weather from Houston police?
I will do that because it has been lovely in Houston. Finally, fall is here. It's cool in the mornings, high 50s, low 60s. It's just been gorgeous. But then again, it will stay like this for us most of the winter. So sorry. So I will tell you when snow's coming your way.
Please, I need to know because I need it desperately.
Yes. So you were just speaking yesterday?
I spoke for the Asian American Hotel Owners Association for their whatever region, like the Washington region, get together, what have you. And it's actually a segment of it. So they have, as part of the organization, they have like a women's subgroup of it. So it was women's education part yesterday. So
very nice.
Tell people good. How to have social hotels, which I think is lacking. And some do it great, some just do it kind of from the corporate level. But I think that there's lots and lots of room for improvement. So hopefully I got through with some people.
Very good. I agree. Very good. Well, that's good. I saw that you were off and busy, and I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I'm hoping to meet the Rafflecopter folks in Denver in a few weeks when I go out there for some business.
Oh, well, I didn't know you were going out there.
Yes, the 23rd, 24th. So I will coordinate something, and you know we love those IRL meetings.
Yeah, I met Greg when I went out there.
Yeah.
They have a neat space, and where their location is just gorgeous, right in the middle of Boulder.
Yes, hopefully I can do that. So, I guess without further ado, we have a wonderful guest joining us tonight, Dustin DeTorres. And Dustin and I have known each other in franchising for a while, Twitter followers, LinkedIn, Google Plus, and all that fun things. But he's actually, there, I'm letting him out of that green room, a 10-year marketing veteran of using social media and inbound marketing. So I knew he knew his stuff about all the digital relationships and really franchising as well. And this whole term inbound marketing seems to be really hot right now. So Dustin, welcome to Social Geek Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. And so go ahead and share anything more that I haven't shared about you, and then give us your definition and what is this whole thing about inbound marketing?
Sure. Well, you know, I've been in digital media for the past 10 years, and, you know, currently I'm working for an agency based out of Boston called Integrated Digital Strategies, and we are you know, we kind of go after the multi-location type companies, franchisors, do a lot of SEO, SEM, web design, and local optimization, which is really big. And, of course, inbound marketing. And I've been, you know, inbound marketing practitioner for about 6 years now since the term's kind of been out. So I've been a huge fan. You know, pretty much every company I've worked for kind of practice inbound marketing. It is a kind of a sexy term right now, and I can see it blending in with just marketing in general in the next few years. But, you know, I'd be happy to kind of elaborate on you know, for the people listening that don't really know too much about inbound marketing.
Sure, please
so,
do.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, you know, basically what inbound marketing is it's a lot of different things, but and a lot of people call it different things, but it's really the process of earning you know, the interest of visitors and customers, you know, that are looking for your products and services. A lot of outbound outbound marketing, traditional marketing, you know, cold calling, direct mail, spam, print, TV, it's kind of pushing those messages out there. But the methodology of inbound marketing is putting yourself out there in the channels where your prospects are, where they prefer to interact with you in, whether it's YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, organic searches, pay-per-click. You want to make sure that you're there. And the basic methodology is attracting, converting, closing, and delighting. It's really a simple methodology. There's four parts. And so what you want to do is you want to blog, you want to have an SEO strategy out there, search engine optimization, you want to be on social media channels, and go after those strangers that are kind of looking for your products and services. And once that you pique their interest with some of the blog posts you put out there, the content you put out there, you know, they're on your site. You want to convert those visitors that are on your site into leads. And how do you do that? You put forms out there. You have, you know, calls to actions on your site. You have landing pages. And once those leads interact with your brand for a while, you want to turn those leads into customers. And this is it could be a short process depending on what you're selling. Inbound marketing definitely shortens the buying cycle. But those leads eventually, hopefully, if you do your inbound marketing right, they turn into customers. And that's, you know, that's kind of through email marketing, workflows internally. That's through nurturing, a nurture process with email. And once they become customers, you want to turn them into, you want to make sure you delight them with more social media and more processes that make them happy and customers, and they tell everybody about your business. So that's kind of the basic rundown of inbound marketing.
I'm so glad you didn't say email blast. I was online earlier today, and I don't know if you saw some of those discussions too, but there was a bundle post guy, Robert, he just cracks me, Caruso, he cracks me up, and he was saying, don't call it email blast. It sounds like you're going to blow people up. And it's like, you're so right. I don't like that term either, but I don't know what else to call it. Email marketing makes sense, but, you know, don't blast people. It's like, okay, I won't use that anymore.
I know. The first thing people think of when they get a big list of people is like, let's email them all, you know, and in my experience over the past 10 years is, you know, let's segment these people into, you know, five or six different categories, and then send very relevant emails to each one of those categories. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here on this podcast, but that I've seen the numbers, and it always works out better. You get more leads, you get more people interacting with your brand whenever you segment. That's a huge part of inbound marketing as well.
Good. So I know we have a lot of type of businesses that listen to the show. Some are small franchisees, a service-based business. Some are restaurant-based. Some are just, you know, small companies or whatever. So are you saying that any type of business can use an inbound marketing strategy?
Yes, I agree with that 100%. And I think, a lot of people ask me, can my plumbing business use inbound marketing? Can my grocery company, we sell cat food. Can we do inbound marketing? I'm like, yes, you can. The methodology is the same no matter what kind of business you're in. Some of the companies that I see kill it in inbound marketing is, you know, retail, anything e-commerce, e-tail, you know, professional services, healthcare, contractors, manufacturers, startup companies especially, because they're kind of carving out their own niche. It's all because in my opinion, the buying process has changed, the way that people are looking for products and services. We've probably all heard this stat before, but I think it was Forrester that said that 80% of the sales process is over by the time they reach out to your company. So, I mean, that's the same with pretty much any kind of industry, any kind of business. Your customers are online. They're talking to your friends, talking to their family. They're looking at the search results, which are now, you know, affected by the social signals, social media. So, you know, we kind of have to, as a business owner, we have to think, no matter what kind of business you're in, how do I adapt to the way that people are really, how they're looking for my products and services. Now, if we're not answering their questions as a business owner through content, through inbound marketing, one of our competitors is.
Dustin, I think you just kind of glazed over something really important that I think we really need to make sure that we explain to our listeners, which is the social signals and how they affect search results. Can you explain to everybody a little bit about how that works?
Sure. So basically, you know, the past year or so, which could be longer than, you know, maybe affected more than I know, but in the recent history of social media, you know, we hear rumors of Google and you know, Bing using social media connections. Your connections are affecting the way that your connections search results come up. And so, for instance, you know, I've got a mortgage broker friend. Whenever I search anything related to mortgages or anything financial, for some reason, he always is on my front page of my search results. And it's funny. If I was his buyer, if I was his persona that he's going after as a prospect, if I was a potential customer of his, the fact that he's on my front page of my search results when I do random searches about financial stuff, that's huge.
Right.
And so that's the way it is now, and it's only going to get better. You know, it's only going to get more ingrained with social media. So the more, you know, as a business owner, if you're on the call right now, if you're putting out content, you're pumping it out across Google Plus, social, you know, Facebook, Twitter. If you're interacting with people, you're getting plus ones. Good for you. You know, you need to have a strategy behind all that, and we could probably talk about that later. But you know, your activity levels will pay off. And you're probably going to be way ahead of your competitors, especially if you're really active on social media, because the social signals are going to affect your buyers.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. So how I know that in some circles you say inbound marketing, it means social media. But how would you differentiate the two, and is one a part of the other?
Right. I know there's a lot of similarities there. For me, the biggest similarity there is that social media is, you know, part of the attract phase. It's the beginning phase where, you know, a lot of people are having conversations about your business, and they're making their buying decisions, and they're meeting on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google Plus. So as you pump out all that content, you know, they're reading it, they're discussing it, they're talking about your company on social media channels. You know, they're evaluating your purchases based on the content that your company put out that has been shared across social networks. I think for me, the biggest part of that is social media and inbound marketing. There's not really any difference there. I think they're kind of one and the same. It's only one big part of the whole inbound marketing machine, really. It's the beginning part. I think people's conversations are really the new marketplace. So as a business owner, you want to make sure that, you know, your conversations with your prospects, the content that you're putting out there in the social sphere, is something that's going to be shared, that's going to be talked about. It's almost like it evens the playing field. So I think social media and inbound marketing really evens the playing field today. So you could be a two-man company going against, say, a 50-man company that doesn't know anything about social media. And the content and the social connections that you have can really put you over the top and put you on an even playing field with your competitor. I think companies that understand the behavior process of of the way that people communicate today, you know, I think they're really going to have a leg up. You know, people are going to perceive their brand differently. The ones that are doing it now are going to be very successful. It's either, you know, adapt or die, and I think the ones that aren't doing it now are going to die out, as harsh as that is. Yeah.
Well, it's very true. And then cut to the chase, Dustin. Just go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, that's kind of blunt, but I'm a huge advocate of change. I think right now we're going through a huge change across the board with, you know, social signals and social media in general and inbound marketing, and you know, I see a lot of big brands doing a lot of cool stuff with content marketing, and I see a lot of small businesses doing it too. So as a small, if I was a small business owner, I would be putting a lot of time and effort into, you know, arranging my site, keeping it fresh with fresh content. You know, Google's algorithms are changing all the time. But, you know, the biggest thing for me is, you know, people always say, like, how do I, you know, where do I start? And I think the first thing is to you know, get a good strategy in place, content marketing strategy, to find your buyer personas, who they are. We can kind of go into more of that detail if you like, and get the traffic going to your site. And once you get the traffic going from social media back to your site, you're going to make sure that you capture their attention with offers, through calls to actions, and then you want to put them into a nurturing process through email. And that's a basic process of inbound marketing.
So the email marketing piece really falls after they have a good strategy in place, strong platforms, great content, so everything's not static, and they've got something then that, you know, their audience can land on and redirect it to their website where we really want them to go. Then the last piece of the pie or the puzzle is to put together the email marketing strategy.
Anyway, I think it comes in after you build up your content strategy in place.
Mm-hmm.
I always, you know, part of that content strategy is, in my opinion, and what I've seen work the best for the people that I've consulted with, the people that IDS works with, is building up your content strategy first. And that's, you know, a lot of people just start with, hey, let's be on Facebook. Hey, let's be on Twitter. And let's put some stuff out there. You know, that's their strategy. But really, the baseline of that strategy needs to be, you know, who are my buyers?
Right.
Who are people that I'm really, who am I going after? So those are called personas in the inbound marketing space. Like, who, am I just posting stuff out there to put stuff out there? What does that really mean, to put it out there? You know, there's no strategy there. I would say, you know, go deep inside your persona, the people that you're going after. Is it two people? Is it three people? Is it one person? Know everything you possibly know about that person. How, you know, where do they sleep? Where do they eat? I've got a buddy here in Orlando. I live in Florida, Orlando, and he's an attorney, and he only has one persona. It's like a third. It's a female, and she's 35 to 45 years old. Has a couple kids, and he knows everything there is to know about that persona. So every piece of marketing that goes out, social media, blogging, video, has something to do with her. So all it's easy because all of his decisions are made right there. And so that's the baseline. And then the second part of your content strategy should be creating a content calendar. If you're a small business owner, you don't have time to do all these huge, elaborate calendars like big companies do. What I always preach is create 12 different categories, so 12 different pieces of 12 categories for each month of the year, and have a theme. And so each month you know, okay, for the month of October, we're going to be going after this type of category. So every piece of content that we put out there is going to be about this. You know, how do you come out with those categories? There's, you know, it should be part of, you know, who your persona like, what your persona likes to consume online through maybe some analytics that you run. some trends, some interviews that you've done with your customers, a whole host of things. But those are kind of the basics of setting up your inbound strategies, content, you know, personas, and setting up your content calendar.
Very good. So one of the biggest questions we always get is, how do you measure the ROI? What's your answer
right.
to that? That's
yeah.
the
I know. Everybody, yeah. Well, especially if you work for a company and there's, you know, if you work for yourself, it's different. But if you work for a company, you probably have a CEO and they're always like, you know, we're spending all this money on Facebook ads and we just
right.
dropped $100 on building a third party, getting, you know, writing blog posts for us and stuff. And how do you measure all that stuff? If you're using inbound marketing, it's really easy. If you're using a marketing automation tool like HubSpot and you have a CRM, a customer relationship management tool like a Salesforce or a Zoho, it's really simple to measure ROI. It's called closed loop reporting. And the way that that's set up is, you know, if you're using a HubSpot, that's tied into your CRM. So everything that you're doing as an inbound marketer, there's sources that are being tracked, every move that you make. And you can log in, you know, every minute and check to see where your traffic's coming, where is it coming from? Is it coming from Twitter? Is it coming from a referral? Is it coming from that PPC campaign we just set up? And all that is being communicated with your CRM as well. And so you have your sales team reporting to marketing about what's happening with the sales process and letting marketing understand, you know, what's going on is good, what's going on is bad, and everybody's always adjusting to what's going on. And so as soon as somebody closes inside the CRM as a customer, marketing gets alerted, and you can flip-flop the whole process and look back at the track of that customer and you can say, hey, we're getting a lot of people coming from this channel. Let's spend a lot more money, on these three or four channels that customer came from. And so that's how you can actually say, hey, we made $10,000 off of Twitter, you know, through closed-loop reporting. We can say that a tweet actually engaged a conversation with this one guy. He got in contact with us after a tweet. A sales rep engaged with him. He downloaded four different white papers. He then came to the pricing page. And then we also engaged with him again through another couple phone calls, and then he closed and became a customer. And so having that data in your marketing automation tool and your CRM is priceless, because then you can always make adjustments.
What would you recommend for a company that may be smaller scale and not outsourcing, and so that
right.
they may be using a marketing automation tool?
Yeah, if you're not using a marketing automation tool, or if you don't have a CRM,
okay.
you know, there's a lot of different people that say different things about measuring the ROI of inbound marketing or measuring the ROI of social media. For me, I think the KPIs, you know, the key performance indicators that you measure in social media should align with your business objectives completely. So that's the easiest way that I've measured social media when I don't have a CRM, when I don't have an inbound marketing machine like HubSpot. So if I have a website and I'm selling widgets, and the biggest KPI for me is people coming to my landing page and downloading a white paper. If they download that white paper or an ebook, they're more likely to become a customer. That's one thing I've noticed over the years. So if I've noticed that, that's what I want to push with my social media. I want to push out content, but I also want to include the offer and get them to come and download that white paper. Because I know if they download that white paper, they're most likely going to, you know, become a customer. So I'm associating social media and inbound marketing with KPIs that actually match my business objectives, that actually have a dollar sign attached. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, because I think a lot of companies are like, oh, I'm going to go get on social media without even mm-hmm. – thinking about what am I trying to accomplish, but it's on social media. So I think just the point of making sure that you have concrete objectives and goals that you are working towards, and you're
yeah.
thinking how you do that, is probably part of the reason why some people say I can't measure anything. It's because you don't know what you're trying to achieve.
I know. I agree with you 100%. It's, a lot of people, I've heard this comment before. I don't know who said it, but it's, you know, don't lease on rented land. And I don't know who said that, but, you know, it's basically saying, you know, if you're putting content out there, you're getting people to interact on social channels, that's cool. That's, you know, helping your social signals out. It's, you know, getting likes. You're gaining your reach. But you got to have a strategy. You want to make sure that at least one out of those five posts or one out of those three posts are bringing people back to your site or bringing people back to off of these social channels back to your website.
Mm-hmm.
To download something or you know, for you to capture their information or to watch a webinar. So that's another thing a lot of people miss out on too.
Yeah, definitely.
And how many
that you can't measure? I just prefer to tell people that you can't measure ROI and you should just deal with it.
That's the easiest way, yeah.
Okay, so ROI, what's that? You know, you can't measure that.
What is ROI? I've never heard
that
before, ever.
I'd like to see that conversation. Well, and so that's the typical or the most popular question we get, you know, how are you going to measure the ROI? And the other one is, great, let's start social media today and we'll start getting results yesterday. It's like,
right.
I mean, they really, I've really seen someone almost just say that. It's like, all right, let's go. You know, and they expect that tomorrow the world is going to change and, you know, money's going to flow. But in reality, how would you address that is how soon can someone start seeing results when they're using inbound marketing?
Wait, can I answer first?
Go ahead.
Go for it.
I would say, oh, you're so cute. And then I would walk away.
Oh. I'd like to see that conversation, too.
I'll let you provide the more appropriate answer to this question.
Okay, so the real answer should be Dustin.
Yeah, I mean it's a long-term approach. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint with inbound marketing. So a lot of people, you know, buy into these inbound marketing automation tools like Pardo and Marketo and HubSpot, and they're like, we're spending $1,000 a month or $500 a month. We should be getting leads right now. You know, so that's wrong. They should really be thinking long-term, and it is a long-term approach. Because you're building content, and the way that the search engines work, if you're doing white hat, if you're doing good things that Google likes, it's going to take some time. It could take months before you start seeing a huge peak in, you know, organic results. So, you know, a lot of recommendations I make are, you know, you might want to supplement some of the inbound practices with paid ads, like Facebook ads or, you know, AdWords on Google to kind of supplement that transition. But always, if you do the right methodologies in inbound marketing, you'll see after 6 to 8 months on the organic side, if you're doing 3 to 5 blog posts a week, you know, I've never seen this differently, and I've worked across multiple different verticals. After 6 to 8 months, if you're doing that much, you know, inbound marketing, you'll see a huge peak. It's almost like somebody turned on the switch, and your organic traffic will just start rolling in. And, you know, a lot more people will be, downloading your white papers, coming on, you know, clicking on your calls to actions, filling out your landing pages. And so that's more leads for you to start nurturing, for your sales team to start interacting with. And then as you do that, you can actually start decreasing your pay-per-click, your paid ads as well. So you're kind of weaning yourself off of that. If you think about the whole process, too, it's, as you're building on this content, it's almost like it's an annuity. So you're building up, you know, that one blog post you posted 6 months ago, it's still out there working for you while you sleep. And you build up, you know, 50, 60, 100 of these posts or these videos or these other, you know, slide shares that you put out there. And they're working for you, and they're building on each other, on top of each other. And so there's got to be a breaking point, and that usually happens around 6 to 8 months if you're continuously doing it. So, you know, I always tell my clients, you know, there's some immediate stuff you can do in, you know, first few weeks, few months. But really, when you'll see results in the first, like, 6 to 8 months to a year.
Now, you talked a lot about white papers and blog posts. And would you say that time span would need to be expanded if somebody is not writing content that much, if they're just on Facebook, on Twitter, et cetera, and not doing, like, the blogging aspect of it?
I think it's it's an all-encompassing. So, you know, part of the inbound process should be being on multiple different channels. And I would say if you're only sticking to social media, you might want to find out where exactly your personas are or your prospects are, and spend a lot of time there. You know, not everybody's prospects and personas are all on Facebook. They might be on like a Fran Social, or they might be on SlideShare, or they might be on some random forum. You know. So I would really, first off, I would find out where your prospects are and then spend a lot of time posting and cross, you know, interacting and engaging in those channels. So I guess to answer your question, it depends. You know, it depends on, where they are.
Right.
I wouldn't just start posting in the social media without doing the research of finding out where they are first.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Yep.
Very good. It certainly all makes sense to us. I think the three of us understand all of this, but it never hurts to repeat this message to our audience, because it still amazes me, though. I've not yet giggled at somebody when they have asked me about when can I get results or what's the ROI. Though, AK, you know, the next time someone asks me that, oh, my God, I'm going to be seeing you and just giggle, oh, you're just so cute. And that's going to roll right out of my mouth before I can stop it. Also, go to Social Geek Radio on October 9th.
I know. I feel like this episode right here should be like the social media marketers or the inbound marketers, like public service announcement. They just
there
you
go. And then, of course, I'm sure somebody you've told that to is probably listening and saying, oh, she was, oh, yeah, anyway. It is funny. So there are a lot of changes always. I swear, I think I go to bed and I wake up in the morning and think, oh, who's changed what now? What did Google do? Is Facebook different? LinkedIn platform? But you know, we stick to some of the updates that we've had lately with, you know, now we have hummingbirds. We used to have pandas and penguins and everything floating around with Google. You want to explain the whole new update with hummingbird?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's tons of different updates. If you look on, if you look at SEO Moz, moz.com is a good website to go to for you guys listening. A few days ago, I looked at all the different updates on moz.com of all the different updates that Google's provided. You know, algorithm updates. It's crazy. I mean, there's like 15 of them over the past couple of years, you know, outside of penguin and pandas and hummingbirds and Mickey Mouse. There's probably Mickey Mouse somewhere. But the main ones that we know of are, you know, have made some major changes in the way that we market, you know, our businesses. And the most recent one was Hummingbird. And basically what that did is, I think it made Google more intelligent and made them more human. You know, Google obviously knows that people search on, you know, using Siri, which is kind of creepy sometimes, but she's not always accurate. And, you know, people ask questions like, tell me, you know, give me the closest Pizza Hut to Orlando, Florida. You know, they're not saying Pizza Hut, Orlando. You know, there's all these different words in between. And they're actually transitioning that concept of natural speak to the way that they feel that they assume and appreciate content online is. So if you have a website and you answer a bunch of questions, if you have a website that's all about fluff and it's for SEO terms like Florist, Florist, Florida, or Florist, Kentucky, Florist, New York City, and you don't have content that talks about, you know, all the different arrangements inside New York City, or, you know, the top five florists in the city. You know, like that contextual stuff that people really care about, that people will actually read. If you don't have that kind of content now, then you're not gonna be pushed down in the rankings. And so this is a good chance for people that have websites to start answering the questions that their prospects are actually asking. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, people, you know, you should, if you're a business owner, you should really think of, or if you're a consultant, you should really think about, you know, how your prospects or your customers are searching for those businesses, you know, instead of buying yoga mats, they're asking, you know, they're typing in a long tail keyword that I'm looking for yoga mats that are the color red, and Google is finding those websites that actually have the most relevant content around that, those search terms. And they're also pulling in a lot of local searches too. So, you know, if you're on Google Local, you know, you want to make sure that you have that developed as well, because people are, you know, asking in their city, in their local geography. So that's a huge part of it too. That's a big part of the stuff that IDS does, is, you know, we're optimizing local searches, which is that's probably a whole other show.
And we tend to do shows like that, don't we, AK, where we have part one, part two, and we continue the conversation.
Yeah, because once we get into it, we're like, oh, gosh, there's so much more we talk about.
That's right.
But see you next week.
On that note, let's talk about newsjacking and how businesses can use it.
Yeah, newsjacking. It's a really exciting term, and it's a brand-new term. It's only been out for about 3 years, newsjacking. It was coined by a guy named David Meerman Scott. He's, I don't know exactly what he does, but he's an author. He's had several books out. He's PR. He's a PR guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a book come out a few years ago called Newsjacking. And so basically what newsjacking is it's a way for any kind of business or entity to gain additional mainstream media attention through positioning their business in a certain way. It could be positive or it could be negative, and you probably heard more stories about negative. But so basically, how you do it is if there's a big story that it's hot on the presses, it's Google News, it's all over the place on CNN. You want to catch at the right time and combine your brand story with that story. So, for instance, one of the best examples of this is Oreo, and I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl and saw the blackout.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big, big company, you know, example of them being ready on the fly, real-time marketing, real-time social media marketing. They put out a tweet. I think it was like, you can still dip in the dark or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
I mean, it went
that
viral.
Was very clever.
Yeah, it was. A lot of big corporations have trouble with that because they have, you know, 50 people in the marketing team. They have different corporate people that have to approve stuff. So I think when it comes to newsjacking, how does a small business owner do this? I think they need to find, it's all about timing. It's all about finding the thing that kind of, you have to find a topic that makes sense, kind of ties into your business as well. You can find these topics by going to Google Trends or Google News. You can do socialmention.com. You can look for trending hashtags. And then just put content out there. And at this point, if you're a new blogger, it actually might be a really good way for you to get a lot of extra exposure and a lot of a lot of new followers, a lot of new subscribers to your blog. Another good example of this is actually, Charmin? Did you guys see the Oscars? Charmin did a couple of these as well. They had some good pictures and put out, I think it was like a picture of a woman's dress with a toilet paper coming from the bottom of it.
I missed that.
And yeah, that was a huge thing. And so this is a really tough subject because a lot of people are like, where do I even start? Where do I go? I think most people don't have, if you have a blog that's a news source, if it's a news source ranked by Google as a news source, it's really easy to do this because you kind of just, you're already a news source. But if you're not, my recommendation to you to do a news jack is to work on blogging and get a big following and post to social media and get a lot of people interacting with your brand first and go after some of those people that might be editors of news sources that are always looking for that hot lead, that nice story. And so a lot of times when a big news event comes out, all these editors are looking for a new angle. And if you can write up something that's a different angle, you could easily get picked up by these major news networks really easily for free and get a lot of exposure for your brand. There's probably a lot more we can talk about this, but that's kind of the basics of a news jack.
So it's all very positive. I mean, the whole news jacking.
It should be. Not actually, you have to be really careful. There was a story of, I think it was Sandy, the storm that was up in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was American Apparel that made a picture of a map. And they highlighted the top three or four states of the Northeast that were being affected. And they said 25% off of everybody that's affected in this region, hot sale. You know, it was almost like a mockery of what was going
right.
on. People didn't take it the right way, and that went viral. And American Apparel, I guess they got exposure. I don't know if they're going for that kind of exposure, but you got to be careful. You know, and hijacking hashtags is a whole other story, too.
I was going to say, boy, do we have a good hijacking hashtag story. But and I was so afraid of this whole newsjacking term because it so easily can be used incorrectly and
yep.
be a negative. And just as an independent consumer or even as a business owner, it turns me off. And I do not like that. But the fun stuff, like you mentioned, the Oreos commercial, I just thought was just brilliant. There's like, they were on top of it. It was seconds, you know, let it roll. It was great. And it's hard to do something like that. You really got to be creative and have a good team to be able to throw that together. I think AK could do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's funny. There's a lot more into it than just if you have a small business and just catching the news at the right time. You need to have a plan in place. You need to make sure your website's set up the right way with, you know, the capture of the leads and the additional traffic, and that maybe can even handle the traffic that might come to your site. And you got to think strategically, how does this, you know, news track, what does it have to do with, is it just random? Am I just bringing a bunch of crazy random people to my site, or am I actually bringing some people that might be buyers to my site? And, you know, and also, you know, how am I capturing their information when they come to my site?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of thinking around it. I would say that if you're thinking about news tracking, do some research, you know, contact a consultant, you know, because it could easily,
right,
like you said, get out of hand and be something negative.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it can backfire, most definitely. So one last question I think that we have here from our audience for you. What are some easy ways to start generating inbound leads to your business? So if someone's really ready to get going with this, what are a few tips that you have to leave us with?
Sure. I think I always go back to blogging. Now, blogging is almost like we've all heard about, we all talk about as marketers. We all know the value in blogging. If you have a site, a lot of people have a blog, but I think I read a statistic about corporate blogs. Only 5% are active, you know, one post a month or something like that. Some crazy stat like that where most corporate blogs are very inactive. So a lot of people have blogs and they're just not active. So I would say, start blogging consistently. and have the things in place to capture the information, people's information, once they come across your organic results, they come across your blog post and the organic results. So each blog post should have a call to action somewhere in it that goes to a landing page. On your blog, you should have a way for people to subscribe to your blog, and another call to action maybe right below that. So the more you blog, the better. And, you know, if you don't know what to blog about, that goes back to the personas. Find out, you know, all the different questions that your persona, the person you're going after, top 50 questions they might ask, and then write a blog post for each one of those questions or make a video. It's only going to help you out, because you're making Google happy, you're making your personas happy, and you're cross-posting all that stuff that you post on your blog on social networks, you're making the social networks happy. So that's probably the easiest way I can say for somebody to start generating leads, and it's relatively free.
Right. Time-consuming, but yes. Very good. And I see that in our chat, we are getting the great reminder that we have to hit geek it out before we forget, and we just start episode 2 now. So, Dustin, share some of your social links for us so that our audience knows how to find you.
Sure. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Dustin De Torres. It's DustinDeTorres. You can also find Integrated Digital Strategies, the company that I work for. I'm director of inbound marketing with, and that's at IDS Local, at IDS Local. And you could just, if you can't remember either one of those after the call, after the podcast, you can just Google Dustin De Torres, and you'll see me in the results.
I will see you. Yes, you just put a new slide share out. So you are definitely out there. I know that you cover all the platforms. So thank you very much for joining us. You can hang on or scoop, but we're going to move right into Geek It Out. AK, you ready?
I'm ready. Thanks, Dustin.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Great talking to you.
All right.
Okay, so if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, you may have noticed that I started cooking this week, which, if you know
I had to check that twice to make sure. Okay, well, it's a crock pot. I get it. She's cooking. I see that. Okay, so
it's a very good deal, because AK has notoriously not cooked ever. Like, today, literally, I chopped an onion for my first time in my entire life. This is how ridiculous I am. And so anyway, so I'm doing Weight Watchers. So Weight Watchers has all these recipes. So I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll start doing those. But our oven's broken. So I went to the Weight Watchers crock pot recipes. And now I'm using the crock pot to make things. I'm being very, very successful about this. So I went on to Pinterest, and, you know, I'm looking up recipes and everything. And I get to this one blogger's site where she has a recipe. And I see this button, and it says, add to your recipe box. And then it says, like, powered by Ziplist. And I'm like, oh, what happens when I click this button? I don't have a recipe box. So
and there's a button. I have to touch it.
Yeah. So I click on the button, and it takes me to this website called Ziplist. And it's a website, but it's also a mobile app. And so I downloaded it on my iPad. And basically, and then you can also drag the little Ziplist recipe clipper bookmarklet up to your, you know, like your bookmarks bar. So whenever you find a recipe on the web, whether they have added the button like I saw on that one blogger's, or whether I use my own button that I put up in my bookmark bar, I can click on it and it adds it to my recipe list within my Ziplist account. And it actually breaks down all the ingredients, and you can create a shopping list from it. And so I pull it up now on my iPad, or I pull it up on my phone when I'm at the grocery store. and I have all of my recipes in one place, and it lists all of the ingredients that I need to buy from the store.
That last part is brilliant, because I carry the phone with me, obviously, when I shop, and there's my list, it's in my notes, or it's like, oh, let me just go to Pinterest real quick and see what I can find. But it's not easy. You have to read through the recipe to find the ingredients you need. This is great.
This is so cool. So it literally scans down through the page, and it extracts all the ingredients and puts them into one nice list for you. And, I've been to the grocery store 4 times this week. Prior to that, I think I've been to the grocery store once in, like, the past 2 months, because it's, like, so easy now for me to just pull up everything I need in one place. And I think you went to
the grocery store because you just wanted to use your Charity Miles app, so.
Oh, yeah, well, that too. For anybody who cooks and follows recipes, I definitely recommend Ziplist is my app of the week for sure, but also has this nice website integration where you can add recipes to your box from all over the web.
Very cool. All right. Saving that one.
Okay. Next we have, it's a site called Dashlane, dashlane.com. And this one is a password manager. And the Secure Digital Wallet. I know there's a ton of these out there. I'm trying to supplement them. I'm really liking this one so far. I hooked it up to my iPad and my phone and Chrome on my computer. And basically I can store all of my passwords for all of my sites, and then all of those passwords are kind of hidden behind one key or totally losing the word that I want, but you have, like, your ultimate password that has everything stored behind it. So, like, when I go to Twitter now, it'll ask me, you know, which profile I want to choose. So if I click on my name or I click on one of my clients' names, it just automatically logs me in. And you can do it with any website at all. I mean, you can do it with Amazon. I could do it with Blog Talk Radio. It prompted me to, ask me if I wanted to save the login. And it also gives you, like, the score about how secure your passwords are, and it'll recommend if, you should change your password because it'd be easy to crack. And if you do any type of, it can do autofill, so anytime you would have to put, like, your email address and any contact forms you're filling out, you can do autofill. And if you do online shopping, you can store your credit card information in your digital wallet, and then it'll ask you kind of which card you want to use. It will prompt you to put in a password before you can just go ahead and buy something. But it seems really neat, and I like that it syncs across all of my devices and my computer. I haven't had any problems with it so far. It's free. There is a premium version, and I don't even know what the premium version offers. I don't know if I would ever need to pay for anything additional than what I feel like it's doing for me right now. It's really nice, and I think it's really user-friendly. So if you're looking for a password manager with kind of the extras, Dashlane is my recommendation at the moment.
Very good. Yeah, I have to remind you one day, though, when you change, it's like, okay, that's not your favorite anymore. You'll have to let me know.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'll try to remember.
Okay.
All right. What do we have next here? Next is one that you sent me this week that's cool. And actually, I wish I had known about this when I was still selling real estate. This one is called Zip Skinny. So ZIPSKINNY. You basically just put in your zip code and you get tons and tons of really cool information about where you live or any zip code that you're researching about.
Right. Now, I sent this to a few folks in the franchise development because I think this would really, really be beneficial when they're trying to define territories for their franchisees. And I tested it for one franchisor, and it's like, I wish I had this when I was defining territories for Computer Explorers, because it really looks up to date and it's clean. And this is definitely a keeper.
Yeah, I think that's a good one for sure. All right, what do I have next? Next, I might want to do another app here. Let me see. I still haven't gotten over my whole app obsession yet. It might never end.
That's okay. We love the apps.
Oh, here's one. It's easy. It's called Tab, T-A-B. Let me see if I can find the URL for it. TabApp.co. So this is an app that will facilitate splitting the bill when you go out to eat with a group of people.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you just take a picture of the receipt and tap the items that are yours, and it calculates how much you owe, including tax and tip. I've used it. It works great. It saves probably a half an hour at the end of every meal if you're with a large group of people. That's my other app pick of the week.
I'm sending that one to my son.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay.
All right, well, that's actually all I have this week.
Okay. Well, that's good. We had a full show tonight. So until next week, AK, I guess we'll just have to geek it out and we'll see each other online.
Yep. All right. That sounds good.
All right.
Everybody.
And thanks, everybody. And I'll see you next or hear you next week.
Yep. All right. Bye-bye.
Finally listened to his mother.